On the morning of April 15th, 2004, 38-year-old Patrice Endress was working at her salon in Cumming, Georgia. Then, just before noon, she vanished. Investigators would eventually conclude that she had been abducted during a 13-minute window. But despite years of searching, following leads, and investigating multiple suspects, they still don't know exactly what happened. Over a year later, Patrice's skeletal remains would be found in a wooded area 6 miles from her salon. But more than 22 years later, everyone is still left asking the same questions. Who killed Patrice Endress, and why? Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Okay, so Patrice's case is going to be an interesting one. There's a lot of people who have covered this story. I'm definitely not the first one. I've heard it referred to as the 13-minute mystery by some. And as I was doing my research for this episode, looking at some of the articles and then watching some of the videos, I stumbled on a video with Patrice's son, Pistol, who we're going to talk about a lot tonight. And I believe at the time when this interview was recorded, it had been about 15 years since his mother passed away. And you could see the hurt in his eyes and you could hear the pain in his voice. And for me, that's what Detective Perspective is all about. Even though there's been coverage on it, even though at this point it appears that every rock has been turned over and there's nothing else that we can do, that's why we have to continue. Because it's in those moments where it's almost like lifting, right? You want to quit, but those extra reps that you do, they're the ones that are most impactful on your muscles. And I feel like when everyone else has stopped and has maybe been, I don't know, deterred or just lost motivation to move forward, that's when someone else has to pick up the slack and reinvigorate the case and talk about it again and make sure that at minimum, nobody forgets about these people, because for the individuals who were affected by this, their family members, the pain is as real today as it was when it first happened. And so seeing Pistol's face and getting to hear from him directly, it just motivated me, not only for this case, but every case that we cover. So we're going to go through this investigation like it just happened yesterday. I'm going to give you all the facts. I'll give you my perspective, and I want to hear from you guys. So we have a lot to get into. Let's dive into this week's case. Patrice Marie Tambers was born on November 28, 1965, to her parents Charlotte and Richard. Little is known about her childhood, but what we do know is by the time she was in her early 20s, she was dating a man named Don, who was 24 years older. In 1988, they welcomed a son named DW, who went by Pistol. He quickly became the center of Patrice's world. Patrice and Pistol's father later ended their relationship, though they remained close friends. Patrice wanted a stable career to provide for Pistol, so she enrolled in cosmetology school, fulfilling a dream she had for years. After graduating, Patrice went to work at a small salon, and she loved her work, and she was described as fun, outgoing, and positive. She had a way of making people feel special and wanted everyone around her to be happy. In 1995, when Patrice was 30 years old, she met 50-year-old Rob Endress, a second shift maintenance supervisor who stopped by the salon for a haircut. The two hit it off and soon started dating, and Patrice told Rob that she always dreamed of owning her own salon, and he offered to help make that dream a reality. The following year, they opened Tambers Trim and Tan at 6195 Matt Highway, also known as Highway 369 in Cumming, Georgia. You're going to see a map on the screen here. And this is a main highway. There's a lot of traffic passing through here. It's pretty heavy. There appears to be a church across the street. And if you zoom out a little bit more, you can see that there is some residential areas behind the church, but there's also a lot of woods behind the salon. So this is one of those cases where, unfortunately, another variable that we have to consider is that it really could be anyone. It could be just a transient passing through who was driving down that highway, or it could be someone who's from the area who knows you can get in and you can get out relatively fast and disappear quickly. So this opens up a lot of different options, and it doesn't make your job as an investigator any easier. In the year after opening the salon, Patrice and Rob got married, and over the next 7 years, Patrice remained a hands-on mom to Pistol. She rarely missed his games, meets, or school events. By April 2004, Pistol was in the 10th grade. On April 15th, Patrice drove him to school, like usual. She told him that she loved him and that she would see him that afternoon. He told her that he loved her too, not knowing it would be the last time they ever spoke. Patrice then went to work at the salon, and everything seemed fine until noon when a customer arrived for an appointment and noticed Patrice's vehicle parked directly in front of the salon, blocking the entrance instead of sitting in her usual parking spot near the side door. The customer noticed that the front door was unlocked, the lights were on, but no one was inside. The cash register was open and the money was missing. Patrice's purse was left on the counter, but had obviously been gone through, and her uneaten lunch was either in the microwave or next to it, depending on what source you look at. After seeing all of this, the customer called 911, and deputies with the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office responded to the salon. They went inside to take a look around. In addition to what the customer had already found, deputies also noticed that Patrice's wallet had been removed from her purse but left behind. Her credit cards were still inside, along with several hundred dollars hidden in a secret compartment. The salon itself appeared untouched. It was clean, organized, and showed no obvious signs of struggle. Deputies found no blood, overturned furniture, drag marks, or any other physical evidence explaining what had happened. It was as if Patrice had simply walked away in the middle of preparing her lunch, and the only thing out of place was where her vehicle had been parked. Now, I will say as a side note, investigators have said that they've never been fully convinced that the primary motive here was robbery because salons don't typically carry large sums of cash, making them unlikely targets for armed robbery. But I would counter that. I hear where they're coming from, but just hear me out. Yes, I agree. Salons don't typically have as much money in their cash registers as a large store or even a bank, right? But you know what they don't have? Security. Makes a job a lot easier, right? You can go in there, you can get whatever you can get, and you can get out. You don't have to worry about law enforcement. You don't have to worry about armed security. You don't have to worry about video surveillance. So if you're someone who's just passing through on this highway and you make it a mission to, along the way, stop at smaller convenience stores or salons or things of that nature, yes, it's going to be smaller amounts. You may have to do it more frequently, but there's less of a likelihood that they're going to get caught. As deputies tried to figure out what kind of scene they were looking at, people who knew Patrice began arriving at the salon. They told investigators it was completely out of character for her to just leave. She would never leave Pistol. Nothing was more important to her than being a mother. And investigators agreed that it didn't seem likely that Patrice left willingly. However, at the same time, they had no evidence that a crime had been committed. Hoping to find additional answers, Pistol was pulled from class and asked if he had heard from his mom. He said no, not since she dropped him off at school that morning, so investigators then asked him to call her cell phone. And he did, but every call went straight to voicemail. That, too, was completely out of character for Patrice. And I do want to point out that I looked it up and also Haley did the research, and we couldn't find any information regarding the cell phone as to whether or not it was eventually found. My gut tells me that more than likely it wasn't. Law enforcement could be keeping that information in-house as a piece of guilt knowledge, but I think it's more likely that, unfortunately, to this day, the phone has never been located. In addition to Pistol, Patrice's husband, Rob, was also contacted at work, and he told investigators that he hadn't heard from Patrice since that morning. He then went to the salon to meet with them in person. Investigators also launched a search for Patrice, but there was no sign of her anywhere. So investigators worked to piece together Patrice's movements on April 15th, and they were able to determine that she had clients scheduled throughout the morning. Her first customer arrived for a 9 a.m. appointment. The customer told investigators Patrice seemed distracted and less attentive than usual. The customer left the salon at approximately 11:05 a.m. About 5 minutes later, at approximately 11:10 a.m., a male customer arrived for a haircut. He left at 11:27 a.m., receiving a call as he walked out the door, and investigators were able to later verify that call through his cell phone records. At approximately 11:35 a.m., another customer called to reschedule an appointment, and the caller told investigators that Patrice seemed unusually short during the conversation, something that was out of character as well. And the only pushback I have here is, I need more context, right? Was this person calling to reschedule an appointment that was scheduled for that day? Because if Patrice was short with her, it could have been because she was pissed that she canceled on such short notice, and now she was unable to rebook that appointment, and therefore she was going to lose money, right? I've definitely had to do it with my barber, and I've been with him for 20 years almost, and I can tell you, even though we're friends, if I call him last minute, I'm like, I'm not coming. Now he's just sitting there twiddling his thumbs. So could this be something? Sure. I think it's more than likely that maybe Patrice was just a little aggravated with this person that they were calling to cancel their appointment, especially if it was that day. And I do want to point out, because it's relevant, that call between the customer and Patrice lasted approximately 2 minutes, meaning that she was off the phone by 11:37 a.m. The next incoming call came at 11:50 a.m., but Patrice never answered. After that, there was no signs of her. And so based on everything they learned, investigators believe that something likely happened between the end of that 11:37 a.m. phone call and the unanswered call at 11:50 a.m., narrowing down the critical window to approximately 13 minutes, and that's where you get your 13-minute mystery. There's a lot more to cover, including some potential suspects. We're going to get into it after the break. If you've tried to quit vaping or smoking and you end up right back where you started, you need to hear about Fume. Fume is a flavored air device designed to help people quit smoking or vaping by breaking that hand-to-mouth pattern. No nicotine, no batteries, no vapor, just clean, natural flavors and a fidget-friendly design that actually feels good to use. So if you've tried before and it just didn't stick, it's not you, you just didn't have the right tools. I keep my Fume in the office all the time, and honestly, half the time I just grab it to fidget with. You've probably caught it in a couple of the episodes. I like the weighted design, I like the look, and I do like the taste. The orange vanilla is delicious. They also have crisp mint and raspberry as well, if orange vanilla is not your vibe. But yeah, the design is incredible. It matches my desk. It's got the ASMR going on if you're listening on audio right now. All right, you guys got the magnets. The magnets are great. The only thing is this mic is super sensitive, so I can't be too close to it. But I really do enjoy the Fume. I always have. I've had it for years. Listen, going cold turkey, it's not really the way these days. It can leave you white knuckling, and trying to do it on willpower alone, it's not the way. And we all know how trying to break bad habits usually go, right? Day one, it feels easy. By day five, you're starting to compromise and negotiate with yourself. But instead of trying to do all of that, Fume will help you replace that motion and that routine without falling back into the old pattern. Over a million people have already used Fume to quit differently. Join them today and grab a journey pack plus a free gift with purchase when using my code DETECTIVE. Addiction is a really good way of saying later. Don't let it. Head to tryfume.com, that's TRYFUM.com, and use code DETECTIVE for a free gift with your first purchase. Thank you to Fume for sponsoring this episode. Okay, we're back, and with the timeline established, investigators theorized that Patrice may have been abducted. Believing a crime had likely been committed, both the salon and Patrice's Tahoe were processed as crime scenes, but as far as we know, nothing noteworthy was located. But that's only what we know. It's been a long time, but is it possible that if there was anything in there that was questionable, law enforcement just hasn't revealed that information? Yeah, that's always a possibility. And investigators continued interviewing witnesses, hoping to fill that 13-minute gap. That's the critical time here. and they eventually located two independent people who reported unusual activity outside the salon at approximately 11:45 a.m., which would be right in that window. The first witness saw Patrice's Tahoe and a Chevy Lumina with a Georgia Quail wildlife license parked directly in front of the salon with the Lumina's hood facing the building. The salon door was open at that time, according to this witness. The second witness drove past at approximately the same time, and although they believe the vehicle may have been a Ford Taurus or possibly a Chevy Malibu, they also saw several people gathered around the vehicle. This witness described a taller, dark-haired woman near the middle of the vehicle, an older woman near the front passenger side, and a third person with shoulder-length hair near the front. Now, this third person, as far as I know, they never mentioned a gender. It could have been a woman, or it could have been a male with longer hair. We don't know, and so we could potentially be looking at two women and a man, or three women. And according to this witness, two of the people appeared to have their hands on one another, and it was unclear whether someone was being helped, had stumbled, or was being pushed. But the interaction stood out because it did not appear to be normal, at least to this person. Investigators considered both witnesses to be credible because they were independent of one another and reported remarkably similar observations during the same time frame. And I agree, there may be a few details that are off, and that's bound to happen, especially when it comes to vehicle descriptions and things like that. But overall, the fact that these two people were driving by at the same time, have no reason to lie, and yet are reporting similar circumstances, even though they have no connection to one another, yeah, I would deem that credible as well. And I also want to mention quickly, because I know some of you, especially the people who are familiar with this story, that there was a third witness who had claimed to see a white cargo van near Patrice's Tahoe, but investigators were able to later determine that this tip had been intentionally fabricated, and the tipster was actually charged with providing false information. So good on that guy. He got exactly what he deserved. But going back to the two first witnesses and their accounts of what happened, on one hand, it sheds a little light. On the other hand, it creates more questions. First off, let's talk about Patrice's vehicle. From what people are saying, the vehicle was usually not parked there. And I've owned businesses before where you want to keep the parking spots, the prime locations in front of your business open for the customers. And because you're going to be there all day, y'all park off to the side. So her vehicle being there when the customer who originally arrived and found the place the way it was, and now these two witnesses saying the same thing, I wonder how it got there. Did somehow these people or this person convince Patrice that they were having car trouble and they maybe needed a jump, even though they were able to pull into the parking lot? Maybe. It also could be much more simple than that. Maybe for some reason that we can't explain, on that particular day, Patrice pulled in and didn't feel like parking away from the salon. Maybe she assumed she didn't have a lot of customers, a lot of appointments, and was in a rush, maybe for her first appointment. So she pulled right in front. That could be the explanation, and there may not be much more to it. But then you add in that there were multiple individuals near this car, whether you believe it's a Lumina or a Taurus or a Malibu. It's something here. You got more than one person, maybe all women. That's odd. That'd be an outlier to have three women abduct this person and rob them. I'm not seeing that. Or there's another explanation. Could these women have been there for something else? Maybe they were stopping in to pick something up. And the second witness who saw maybe a second vehicle describes something where a customer could have gone in there to pick up some product. Again, I'm throwing things out there. I have nothing to substantiate it. Yes, both of these witnesses were there around the same time, and you would think that they both saw the same vehicle, but it's also possible that they're both right. One saw a Chevy Lumina with a specific license plate, and then maybe one saw a Taurus or Malibu with three women who were there for normal reasons. Like I said, to make an appointment, pick up a product, say hello to Patrice, maybe they're customers. So you could have a situation where those women were there first. They pick up what they were grabbing. They get out of there. And then the real person we're looking at, the real suspect, pulls in immediately after them or could have been off to the side waiting for them to leave. A lot of possibilities here. And as investigators continued developing Patrice's timeline, they also looked closely at Rob's movements on that day as well. He was brought in for questioning, during which he denied any involvement and said he had been home before driving to work, stopping for gas in Woodstock 40 minutes from home on the way. According to Rob, it would have been physically impossible for him to drive to Patrice's salon, commit the crime, stop for gas, and still arrive at work when records showed that he did. Rob also noted that Patrice did not have a life insurance policy, so there was no financial motive. Investigators did say they thoroughly examined Rob's timeline, and while they did not believe it completely ruled out his involvement, they said it significantly reduced the likelihood that he was personally involved in Patrice's disappearance. So you see how they worded that there? Yes, they're saying that he may be right. Physically, it's impossible for him to be in these two places at once or to arrive at work when he did. But still, they're not completely ruling him out. And if you listen to what they said there, he could not be personally involved. It doesn't mean that he wasn't indirectly involved. So there are some people who have latched on to the murder for hire theory. And I've definitely seen some people talking about that. But as far as what I found, there's been no evidence to support it. So something to consider moving forward. I think Rob is a weird character, and we're going to talk about him more near the end of this episode. But from what I've gathered, there's not a lot here. And if he was somehow involved, you do have to ask yourself why. And we're going to get into that later as well, as far as some possible explanations for that. Because let's just say Rob and Pistol, they don't get along. And speaking of the people closest to Patrice, as I just said, law enforcement never fully ruled out Rob. And that's probably due to some of the statements that were given by the people who knew Patrice best. You see, multiple individuals described tension in the marriage. They believe Rob was jealous of Patrice's relationship with her friends and family, including Pistol. Because of that, Patrice had become unhappy in the marriage and arguments were becoming more frequent. Pistol believed much of the conflicts centered around him. He said that Rob resented the amount of attention Patrice devoted to her son and that Patrice refused to back down whenever they argued about him. Pistol also said that around 2 weeks before Patrice disappeared, she told him that she was considering divorcing Rob because she had been unhappy in the marriage for years. Now, as you might imagine, Rob strongly disputed that account. He denied knowing Patrice was considering divorce, saying she never mentioned it. He went on to say that he and Patrice rarely argued, and their biggest disagreement was parenting because he believed Patrice did not discipline Pistol. Rob also claimed that it was Pistol who was jealous of how close he and Patrice had become, not the other way around. So the investigation continued, and by mid-May, investigators were following more than 700 leads while the FBI developed a profile on the possible abductor. But they didn't have a viable suspect until January of 2005, when serial killer Jeremy Jones began speaking with investigators in Alabama. While discussing murders he claimed to have committed, Jones said he wanted to talk about a hairdresser in Georgia. He claimed he had been high on meth when he stopped at the salon and asked the hairdresser to come outside under the pretense of needing a jumpstart. According to Jones, he forced her into his vehicle at knife point, drove away, murdered her, and took her body to Sweetwater Creek in Douglas County. Jones also drew a diagram for investigators showing where both vehicles were parked outside the salon. Investigators said the sketch accurately matched the parking area outside of Patrice's salon, prompting an extensive search of Sweetwater Creek using cadaver dogs, boats, and search teams. But despite those efforts, they found no evidence or human remains. Jones later recanted his confession, reportedly telling investigators he made it up to receive better treatment in prison. And even though he reneged on his initial statement, investigators continued looking into him, but they never found evidence connecting him directly to Patrice's disappearance. However, he was also never publicly ruled out, so something to consider. The next big update in Patrice's case came on December 6, 2005, when the Dawson County Sheriff's Office received a call from volunteers at the Lebanon Baptist Church on Kelly Bridge Road. While clearing a heavily wooded area, they discovered what appeared to be a human skull. The location was extremely remote and approximately 6 miles from where Patrice disappeared, so investigators immediately considered the possibility that the remains belonged to her. At the same time, the location raised new questions. Investigators said it would have been difficult to carry a body through the dense woods, but they could not determine whether the victim had been carried, dragged, or walked into the area under their own power. So investigators assembled a large search team to carefully process the scene, and by the time the search concluded, they had recovered slightly less than half of a person's skeletal remains. No clothing, jewelry, or other personal items were found. The remains were transported for autopsy, and testing confirmed they belonged to Patrice. The medical examiner's office was able to determine her cause of death, but they have never publicly released that information. You know, you want to keep it as guilt knowledge. All they would say is that it was obvious she was a victim of foul play. Now, as far as where Patrice was found, I have it up on the screen right now if you're watching on YouTube. And you can see from the location where the salon is to where she was found, it's only 6 miles, but it's a drive. It's a drive, and it is a very remote area, so it could be someone who was familiar with this location. But at the same time, it could also be someone who was driving on this highway, took this road up north to this location, saw that it was rural and that they could hide for a little bit, and they pulled off the road and pulled into this area and then somehow got Patrice into the woods. And I'm going to talk about my theory regarding how they would have gotten her out there during my perspective. Investigators also said Patrice's distinctive wedding ring has never been recovered. It consists of two wedding bands that had been soldered together with a marquise cut diamond at the center. Investigators hope that someone someday may recognize the ring, leading them to the person responsible for Patrice's murder, or at minimum, someone who has information about what happened to her. With Patrice located, the investigation was reclassified as a homicide and transferred from Forsyth County to Dawson County. The GBI also joined the investigation, and together, the agencies began reviewing the entire case from the very beginning. And during this process, they went back through all the interviews, looked at every lead that had come in, and they were really hoping that with this fresh look, they would uncover something new. We've seen that happen before. But unfortunately, in this case, that doesn't appear to have happened because, once again, the investigation slowed down. And I do want to go back to Jeremy Jones real quick because I know they never fully ruled him out, but I will say that after her remains were found in this remote area and not at the creek where Jeremy Jones had claimed to have left her, investigators did move off him a little bit. He wasn't their top suspect. But I could also argue that he gave you some truth. Like, how did he know about this parking lot? But maybe he didn't give you everything. Maybe he didn't want to pin himself down by having you recover the body and lock him in really tight for this homicide. So he could have thrown you off a little bit. It wouldn't be hard to believe that someone like this would lie to law enforcement. But if I were to tell you this was the only suspect they looked at who had this type of history, I'd be lying. And we're going to talk about another person right after the break. Ready to grow or streamline how you run things? Square is offering my listeners and viewers up to $200 off Square hardware when you sign up at square.com/go/detective. Again, that's square.com/go/detective. Start with Square and build a setup that grows with your business. Listen, if you've been to CrimeCon, then you already know that I use Square. We use it to sell all of our merchandise or in our coffee. And I like using it because it tracks inventory. I can see not only what styles I have left in stock, but also what sizes. And then at the end, when I'm in my hotel room at night, I can go into the analytics, the reports, and see how much we paid for the inventory and how much we've sold. So it gives me a visualization, a representation of where we are and how successful we've been so far, so I can make adjustments on the fly. Additionally, you can take payments, manage inventory, schedule your team, track reports, all in one connected platform. No switching tabs, no separate logins, just one place for your business to live. And you've seen this as well at CrimeCon. We have the little iPad and we have the card reader where you can tap, you can slide the card in, or we can just use our cell phones and scan your card that way. So super convenient, makes the process easy for us, and most importantly, easy for the customers. And like I said, all the payment options are available. You can tap, chip, swipe, Apple Pay, invoices, all through this one system. Square now offers three clear plans. You have free, plus, and premium, so you can pick the tools you need now and grow into more when you're ready. And sellers who use Square software see 9% higher sales on average. Square helps you run your business more smoothly, bringing payments, operations, and insights together in one place so you're ready for whatever's next. Right now, my listeners and viewers can get $200 off Square hardware when you sign up at square.com/go/detective. That's square.com/go/detective. Get started with Square and build a setup that works the way you do. You ever go through something tough? Maybe a breakup, burnout, lost your job, or even just that creeping anxiety where you're laying in bed, sitting there looking at the sky thinking, I wish I just had someone to talk to who actually gets it. I know I've definitely been there multiple times, and I've seen how powerful therapy can be, not just for me, but for my friends and for my family, for the people close to me who were really struggling and needed help. But let's be honest, getting access to the right therapist, it can be a nightmare. You call around, people aren't taking new clients, they're not in your network, or it costs a fortune. That's where Rula comes in. Rula is changing the game. They make high-quality mental health care accessible and affordable. Most people pay only $15 a session, and they take most major insurance. You answer a few quick questions, and Rula helps you find a licensed professional who meets your preferences, and you can be talking to someone as soon as the next day. And the best part about Rula, they have over 15,000 therapists and psychiatrists in their network. No waitlist, no frustrating back and forth. Rula makes it easy to find a mental health provider who's accepting new patients, and appointments are available as soon as tomorrow. Plus, Rula sticks with you throughout your journey, checking in to make sure your care is actually helping you move forward. So if you've been thinking about therapy, or even if this is the first time you're considering it, this is your sign. Thousands of people are already using Rula to get affordable, high-quality therapy that's actually covered by your insurance. Visit Rula.com/detective to get started. That's RULA.com/detective. You deserve mental health care that works with you, not against your budget. All right, we're back. And as I mentioned, in 2008, investigators identified another possible suspect, serial killer Gary Hilton. He came to their attention after the January 2008 murder of Meredith Emerson in Northern Georgia. Hilton abducted Meredith and her dog while they were walking, took her to Dawson County, held her captive for several days, and then murdered her. Investigators eventually linked Hilton to at least four murders committed between 2007 and 2008, most of which occurred near National Forest. While those crimes were very different from Patrice's disappearance, another aspect of Hilton's behavior caught investigators' attention. Hilton was known to go into hair salons, particularly around lunchtime, and con people out of money. He was also known to have been in Forsyth County, where Patrice's salon was located, after being stopped there for a traffic violation, although I do want to point out it's unclear exactly when that occurred. Detectives thoroughly investigated Hilton in relation to Patrice's case, but they have never found any evidence placing him at the salon, though they have also never been able to rule him out. And so you can take this either way. Personally, I think Jones is better for this than Hilton, but there are other Joneses and other Hiltons out there who maybe haven't been identified yet who could also be good for this. And so the search for answers continued over the years without any additional movement. But then in 2020, Netflix's reboot of Unsolved Mysteries featured Patrice's case, bringing renewed attention. And for this episode, Rob agreed to be interviewed and discussed several topics that many viewers found unusual. You see, he admitted that just one day after Patrice disappeared, he changed the locks on the house and refused to let Pistol return, even to collect his clothes or personal belongings. And this is interesting. First, we know that Rob and Pistol didn't get along. We've already established that. But the reason this is fascinating is because this is only one day after Patrice went missing. And so for all we know, she could be returning at any time. Maybe something happened. Maybe she wanted to get away. Who knows? So to change the lock so quickly, it's almost as if he knew she wasn't going to come back. Now that's a stretch. It may just be a coincidence. It may just be petty, where he now thinks at this point that Patrice left him and he's pissed at everyone. So He doesn't want the son coming back to get his stuff, so now he's going to hold it hostage as a form of retaliation against not only Pistol, but also Patrice if she does return. That could be the explanation here, but as you would imagine, people had a side eye to this because it doesn't look great. Optically, it's not the way you want to be perceived by the community. And so when Rob was asked why he did this, he claimed that he did it for security and because he did not want Pistol living at the house. Rob said that they did not get along and he believed that Pistol would be better off staying somewhere else. So with nowhere else to go, Pistol moved in with his biological father. But that wasn't even the strangest part of this interview, because Rob went on to describe what happened after Patrice's remains were identified. He said he asked a funeral home to, quote, reassemble her remains and lay them out so that he could see her one last time. According to Rob, this is directly from him, while viewing her remains, he picked up Patrice's skull, carried it around for a few minutes, and then put it back and kissed her goodbye. Again, not passing judgment here, but if I were at this funeral home and I saw someone walking around with their spouse's skull, I would be disturbed. Just my opinion. That's all I'll say. Let me know what you guys think. And listen, I'm not even done, because Rob went on to say that he had Patrice cremated and he kept all the ashes to himself, didn't even give anything to Pistol. And for the next year, he slept with her remains in his bed as if they were, quote, a teddy bear. Once he no longer wanted to sleep with the ashes, Rob said he placed them in a box in the closet. And during this interview, he actually dug the box out and said that it was good that he had them and that he would never let anyone else have them, especially Pistol. And I have a problem with this. I have a problem with multiple things that he said during this interview. Obviously, him keeping his spouse's remains, her ashes in bed with him and referring to them as a teddy bear, that's problematic to me. But again, everyone grieves differently. But the bigger issue that I have is the fact that he refuses to give Pistol any of her ashes. He knows deep down that Patrice and Pistol had a great relationship and they were close, and she would have wanted him to have some of her ashes. To keep that from Pistol is wrong on so many different levels. You shouldn't even have the ability to do so. That's her son. And so for you not to be able to put your differences aside when something this tragic occurred, and to be this stubborn even all these years later, I got a problem with you. And I would tell you that, but unfortunately, 3 years after the Unsolved Mysteries episode aired, Rob died at the age of 77. Fortunately, at that point, Patrice's ashes were returned to the surviving family. I don't know exactly if Pistol got some of those ashes, but I have to imagine he did. In April of 2026, 20 years after Patrice disappeared, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation provided a brief update saying they continue to search for answers. But unfortunately, that is the last major update we have in Patrice's case. More than 22 years later, her killer has never been identified or brought to justice, leaving her family still searching for answers. All right, so let's dive into this perspective, and I want to start with some of the theories that we can explore. And I'm going to start with the least likely to, in my opinion, the most likely. And the first one being that this was her leaving on her own. She had decided to escape with someone else. Maybe she was seeing someone that we're unaware of, and this was her opportunity to leave the marriage that she was over and go somewhere new. And this person had created the illusion that they wanted to be with her, and this was the day they were going to do it. She was going to go to work. She was going to make it seem like she got abducted, but in reality, she was escaping with this new person. Not likely. There's no evidence of it, not on her cell phone, so no digital records that suggest that, no eyewitness testimony where maybe she confided in someone that she was talking to another person, no evidence whatsoever. And to think that this person, if there was someone, would spend time with her, talk to her, build a relationship with her just to kill her immediately when the opportunity was presented, unlikely. That's not what happened here. The next one I want to mention, and it's unfortunate because he's no longer here to defend himself, would be that even though Rob didn't kill her himself, he hired someone to do so. And the motive here would simply be he felt like, hey, if I can't have her, nobody can. Her and Pistol have a great relationship. I'm jealous of that. She's getting ready to leave me alone, and that's not going to happen. So he enlisted the help of a friend or someone who he was able to find, and they staged it to look like a robbery slash sexual assault slash murder. And although I don't think that's what happened here, I can't rule it out. Especially when you go back and you look at those interviews, they're bad. Go watch them for yourself. Maybe Rob was just a weird person, and I want to be respectful because, again, he's no longer with us. And there's a real possibility that he was a victim as well. This isn't high on my list. I'm mentioning it because a lot of you have already seen those interviews, or you're going to go now and you're going to watch them, and you're going to be pissed at me if I don't mention this scenario because of the things that he said and the way he behaved after Patrice went missing. So I got to put it out there. But for me, when it comes to the hierarchy of theories that are out there and what's the most likely, this is near the bottom of the list. And there are more to me that are more plausible. And that's where we're going to go next. First one being a robbery gone wrong. This would be someone who goes in there looking for some cash, and during the interaction, they decide that she's seen too much. They're not going to leave her there because either she saw the vehicle or she saw this person's face, or maybe she even recognized them through a mask, realized who it was. And at that point, they had to call an audible and take her with them. They may have been in possession of a gun. They could have been in possession of a knife. So initially it starts off as a robbery. They take her at knife point or at gunpoint. They get her in the car. She voluntarily goes because she has no other choice. She's in fear and she's a liability. They can't just let her leave. So they drive her up to a remote area as they're fleeing the state or fleeing the county. And as soon as they find a spot where they can pull over, they do so. They force her into the woods and then they kill her and continue on their way. And more than likely, if that's the case, this is a transient. This is someone who's just passing through, using this highway, not from the area, and something about this particular occurrence escalated. I can't tell you why, but it started off as a robbery, and unfortunately, it ended as a murder. Only the person responsible or the people closest to them would be able to answer that question. The final theory that I want to talk about, in my opinion, is the most likely. I think from the start, this crime was sexual in nature. I think this person knew Patrice, and I think that they had seen her there on multiple occasions. And yes, I'm suggesting that this was a local. They knew the scheduling, they knew the location, and they were familiar with the area, how they could get in and get out. And to me, they went in there, and all along, they were there for her. Yes, they made it look like a robbery. They wanted to throw law enforcement off. You keep her purse there. You take the cash out of the cash register. That's really it. They didn't do anything else. And so they take the money to throw law enforcement down a different path. But the reality is they were there for her all along. And so more than likely they had a gun or they had a knife. They go in there and they wait because they know the area. And again, they know the scheduling. They wait till lunchtime. They see the last customer come out at 11:37 and they're distracted. They're on their phone. So the suspect may have been in the parking lot in their vehicle. And unfortunately, this person didn't notice it because they were on the phone. And so the suspect pulls up, and within that 13-minute window, they're able to go in. They get her at knife point or gun point. They grab the cash and they instruct her to come with them or they're going to kill her. So unfortunately, that's exactly what she does. She gets in the car, and because, again, this person's familiar with the area, they drive up to this remote location that they're familiar with, and they force her into the woods, again, promising her that if she does what they tell her to do, she's going to be okay. But she's not going to be okay. And while they're out there, I'm not going to get into details. Things go down, things happen, and after that transpires, she's killed, and she's left there. And as far as her clothes and her ring, There's a few possibilities. They could have been dumped at different locations, or they could have been kept as trophies for this person to memorialize what they did. Because more than likely, they were a stalker. They had a fascination with her for maybe weeks, maybe months, maybe years. And they finally acted on it. And so they kept those items as a keepsake. Maybe they still have them to this day. So if I'm right, where do we go from here? DNA is going to be difficult. It was only skeletal remains, so the ability to pull DNA from her body would be extremely difficult. If we were able to find her clothing, it may be more possible depending on how it was preserved. If they were found and they had been preserved and not exposed to the elements, there's a possibility that they could find suspect DNA. And in that case, you enter it into CODIS and hopefully you get a match, because more than likely, whoever this person is, this isn't the only time they've ever done something like this. And this is where investigators, they got to dig deep. They got to look inside their own community. Who were the players that were around during that time? Did any of them leave shortly after? Was there any behaviors being displayed by people who were from that area that were picked up by other individuals who, for some reason, never thought that it was important enough to come forward? They have to look at the people who were living there at that time and see if any of them abruptly left shortly after Patrice's disappearance. They also have to look to see if maybe there were certain individuals who displayed suspicious behavior after the fact, which was noticed by their family and friends, but for some reason, they never thought it was important enough to come forward and relay that information to law enforcement. They also have to go back into the files and look at cases that transpired before Patrice's murder and also after. Are there any particular cases that contain an MO that's similar to what you experienced with Patrice? Not exact, but something where maybe it was a failed abduction. Maybe someone who was seen up in the particular woods where Patrice's body was eventually found. Because make no mistake about it, for someone to go in there and know how to navigate those woods and to know that's the spot where she at least wouldn't be found for a decent amount of time, this person's been to that location in the past. Whether it was last week or during childhood, they knew the stomping grounds and they knew exactly where they were going from the salon. And so if I'm working this case from where I'm sitting, number one priority is still to try to track down her clothes. Maybe go back to the scene of the crime and see if something was missed. Because although it's been a lot of years, maybe you get lucky. It's under a tree trunk or the way it was folded, something's been preserved where you can now use the science and technology available to potentially identify the suspect. That's number one. Locating her ring would be huge as well. If you find someone in possession of that ring, now you got something. I would go back and look at case files, not only from my jurisdiction, but from surrounding agencies to see if there's any correlation between those cases and Patrice's murder. And finally, probably most important, you keep the case alive. You make sure that everyone knows about this investigation, that everyone knows it's still active and you're not going to stop until you find out what happened and who's responsible. And you do that by covering the case on podcasts, on YouTube channels, sending out flyers, making sure that local news channels still cover her story and remind them year after year that this took place and the person responsible is still out there somewhere. And you really try to incentivize people to come forward. There needs to be a reward. If someone has information that could solve this case, even though to them it seems minor, they should come forward. Let law enforcement decide how relevant the information is. And so on that note, just a recap, 38-year-old Patrice Endress was last seen at approximately 11:37 a.m. on April 15, 2004, while working at her salon in Cumming, Georgia. Investigators believe she was abducted during a 13-minute window between a phone call she answered and another she missed. More than a year later, Patrice's skeletal remains were discovered in a remote area of Dawson County. Investigators determined that she was a victim of a homicide, but they have never publicly revealed her cause of death. More than 22 years later, no arrests have been made, and Patrice's killer has never been identified. If you have any information about this case, please contact the GBI tip line at 1-800-597-8477. As always, my final words go out to the friends and family of Patrice, specifically Pistol. As I said at the top of the show, your interview had a profound impact on me. It made me want to go to work and to make sure that your mother's story gets out there. I know a lot of people have covered it. I haven't seen anything as of late, and that's where I wanted to step in. But even bigger than that, you represent so many people, so many families who have been impacted where one day you're with your loved one and within hours, they're gone. And for everybody else, they move on. But for you, this is a nightmare that you've never woken up from, and nobody should have to experience that. I can't take away that pain. And frankly, if we figured out who did it, I don't even know how much relief you would have from that. But we gotta try. And I do think that part of it is hope. Knowing that there are people out there who may not know you personally, but want to see you get the justice that you deserve, not only for you and your family, but most importantly for your mother. And it's a long shot. I'm not gonna lie to you. You already know that. But I know one thing. If we do nothing, we'll never figure out what happened. And I truly hope that the person responsible is still out there somewhere. I hope they're kicking, because I want them to look over their shoulder every day wondering, when's it going to be? When are they going to finally drag me out of here and bring me into a courtroom so that you and the rest of your family can finally look them right in the eyes and let them know that you have never forgotten about your mother and you have never stopped fighting for her. I really hope that one day soon I get the opportunity to sit right here and update all of you and let you know that, yeah, although it was a long shot, we got a break in the case and we finally have some answers. And the person responsible is in custody where they belong and they're going to answer for what they did. But until that day comes, please, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you soon.